Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has an army to face down Hamas, Hezbollah and Iran, but in October he must face his own people. Predictions of his fate at the ballot box have been radically revived in the last week or so, after two former prime ministers, Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid, from two different parties, joined forces in a new party, Be'ahed, together to unseat Netanyahu's coalition. Or so they hope. To discuss politics today inside Israel, I'm joined by Iris Makler once again. Iris, veteran Middle East correspondent, including for the ABC, who is now based in Sydney. Iris, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, who are these two characters?
They're not as little known as you might think. They both went into politics, that is, into the Israeli parliament in the same year, in 2013. They both were together in various governments since then, but they're a new generation, including both being prime ministers, by the way, in that small period of time when Benjamin Netanyahu has not been in office, so 2021, 2022. So they're known quantities, but they're a younger, a different generation, early 50s, early 60s. Benjamin Netanyahu, now 77 years old. So it's like a next generation, one quite not religious, one quite right-wing, Naftali Bennett, former head of the Settlers Council. So that's the West Bank Settlers Organisation. And he's also, I suppose you'd call him a tech bro today. Then he was just a tech entrepreneur, made a lot of money that way, and then went into right-wing politics. Like many people in Israeli politics today, he was actually in Netanyahu's office and then fell out as in, you know, informed his own party. That's another common way to get to Israeli politics.
And what's Lapid's?
Lapid's antecedents are a father who was a journalist and then a politician, and Lapid became a journalist and then a politician. So it's in the family story. And like someone who was, I can't even think of an Australian equivalent. He did a lot of light entertainment. He wrote books. He wrote songs. And he was fronted a news program, but he wasn't a serious, serious journalist. He was a very well-read columnist. And then he went into politics and is now leader of the opposition.
Are either of these men peaceniks?
No, neither. I would say neither. Naftali Bennett is a right-winger. Yair Lapid is a centre-stroke, even centre-left in Israeli terms. I think, you know, I think what's hanging over this election is one word, and that's Hungary. So everybody here in Israel looks across at the victory against Orban, against a leader of 16 years who seemed immovable, and they're given quite a bit of heart by that, all the opponents of Netanyahu. And the lesson they're taking from, well, there's two lessons really, but the lesson they're taking from Hungary is you can be even in the same party as the leader, and if you leave, it doesn't matter as long as what you're offering is a real alternative. And it's not left and right in classic terms. It's more, do you believe it? What Pieter Morzsor persuaded the Hungarians was that he was anti-corruption and believed in democratic institutions. So it wasn't left and right. It doesn't matter that he was in Orban's party. And it's the same here. It's not necessarily left and right. It's whether you can persuade the public that you are a real alternative to Netanyahu. And the other lesson from Hungary is that everybody, it should be unified. All the opposition parties should get together in one party. Whether this actually applies to Israel or not, I'm not sure, but that's the lesson that's being debated. Form one party, get everyone behind you, defeat Benjamin Netanyahu.
But very deliberately this time, there appears to have been no overtures to the Arab parties in the Knesset to join the opposition to Netanyahu. This is a Jewish operation, am I right?
In fact, these particular two, when they were previously in government, Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett, were sitting with an Arab party, the only Arab party who agrees to sit in government. So there are Arab parties that stand for the parliament, but they don't sit in government. That's been their policy. The first person to change that was Mansour Abbas. Very interesting, you know, from an Islamist party in the south of the country, very unusual politician, There were overtures to him by Benjamin Netanyahu at the time. But the party he chose and the party he went with, or the government he chose, was that led by Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid. And that has been a bone of contention ever since. And I don't know that many Jewish parties would succeed in sitting with an Arab party, with Mansour Abbas this time.
But can they get the numbers without sitting with the Arab parties?
That's the issue, and that was the issue then too. They couldn't. They didn't have the numbers. In fact, Naftali Bennett had only 6 seats, but he was lured in to become prime minister because without his 6 seats, without Mansour Abbas's small number of seats too, they simply couldn't get that opposition to Netanyahu up. And now they are hoping, I guess with this move, there are other politicians as well, but they're hoping to unify the centre in a Jewish operation, as you put it, as opposed to a multi-party operation.
And they're not offering peace.
They're not even discussing it. I think their main aim is to change this coalition government, which is very hard right, and has been led by Benjamin Netanyahu in some iteration or other for a very long time. I don't know, David, you have to have lived in a country that has one ruler for so long to understand how oppressive it is.
I grew up under Bob Menzies. I mean, don't talk to me like that as if I'm inexperienced in this phenomenon.
Well, then you know. And Bob, he had his drawbacks. But it's a different thing if you are living under Orban in Hungary, or I'd suggest living under Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel if you don't agree with him.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
So I think the impetus to remove him for the centre parties, for the people who are talking about an equality with the ultra-Orthodox, all those internal issues are very important, and I think they predominate.
But would the Together Party represent or, embody in some way any of the criticisms of Israel that are now so common around the world? The savagery of the way in which they are fighting, the perpetual wars, the ways in which they are dealing with Palestinians. I mean, is there anything that either of those men are proposing that would radically change the world's judgment of Israel?
At this point, it's very hard to say, partly because we haven't heard, clear policy, a description of any of the things you're describing from them. I'm not optimistic that they would be, that I could reply to you and say, yes, they're going to answer all those questions. I don't see that. Interestingly, there is one wild card, if you like, on that centre-right area that we're discussing. Because if you look at Israeli politics, the right-wing and the ultra-right and the ultra-orthodox, they're not going to move to the centre. The left-wing are pretty firm, smaller but firm. So it's these swinging voters in the centre that you have to attract in order to unseat Netanyahu, and that's who they're going for. And the wild card in all of that is a former chief of staff called military chief of staff, whose name is Gadi Eisenkot. He's currently possibly the most popular politician in Israel. He lost a son during the Gaza war and a nephew actually as well. So he has that public sympathy for a bereaved father. He handled all that with great grace. I saw an interview with him at the time. So he's very popular, and it's not clear where he's going to end up because he's in a party that's dissolving at the moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, Iris did some things with her hands which looked like the untangling of some yarn.
But dissolving, perhaps.
If we could put that into words, roughly what are his politics?
So he is, you'd call him a hawkish left-winger, I guess. But it's back to what I said about it's not left and right in any sense that we understand those words perhaps here. He does believe in the institutions of the country, the democratic institutions. He is hawkish on Israeli security. He did believe in this Gaza war and the need for a war with Iran. So those are, what we would call more right-wing views, but in the context of Israel at the moment, I suppose you'd say security-focused.
So there's no point in looking at change here as some kind of radical change to the way in which Israel's been behaving in the last couple of years.
I think given the length of time that Benjamin Netanyahu has been in power, given the extent to which he dominates Israeli politics and Israeli institutions, some argue coherently to their detriment, I think that the removal of Benjamin Netanyahu from office, if they can achieve it, that's not a done deal. We can talk about polling and its complexities.
My next questions.
Excellent. But if they can achieve that, that is a radical change in itself.
Yep. What is the polling?
The polling is confusing because there are two sets of polls, one of which shows what has been consistently shown, which is that Benjamin Netanyahu would not become the next Prime Minister of Israel. And it's that prognosis which has kept this particular government in office, you know, for the full four-year term, which is almost unheard of in Israeli politics. But the more unpopular the government is, the longer it survives because it's got nowhere else to go. No one's going to blow it up and no one has. So that's one set of polling. A second set of polling, and that polling is based on, if people say don't know, they throw out that answer. So if you say, I don't know who the next prime minister should be, we don't count you at all.
Right.
The second set of polling, which gives a much better chance to Benjamin Netanyahu, does, I guess, an Australian thing. They second guess what would happen based on other answers.
What's the probability of the don't know?
Yeah. Where's the don't know going? And on that basis, they say Benjamin Netanyahu has a much better chance.
What do the people of Israel think of stunts like Ben-Gvir's wife giving him a birthday cake with a noose on it?
You know, it's back to what does it... Because there's so many tribes in Israel and their views are quite different to each other. I think all the Ben-Gvir voters would think that was great. And I think there are a number of Israelis all the way back into the Likud, you know, into Benjamin Netanyahu's right-wing party, who would not think that was great. So you've got an array of responses based on where you stand.
And they've already made up their minds, so it's not going to, you know, celebrating the possibility of executing Palestinians on a birthday cake. That's just something that the Ben-Gvirists do. So,
well, they are Kahanists. You know, they are. It's like bringing the Ku Klux Klan into Israeli politics. Another achievement of Benjamin Netanyahu, by the way. He was the midwife to bringing this man into this government. So, if you have the Ku Klux Klan in politics, you're not surprised by their racist views. That's how I would put it. And that's why previous governments, previous Israeli parliaments, kept these Kahanists, as they're called, and the original mayor Kahana, the racist rabbi, they kept him out of the parliament. It was a huge thing when Netanyahu brought this man into the parliament. And that's why, you know, it's the middle ground that will determine this election.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Iris Makler about the politics of Israel now. Netanyahu has asked the president for a pardon. Remind us what charges he's facing. Remind us how he has managed that for these trials never to come to fruition, and what are his chances of getting a pardon?
Let's go back to the charges. Let's start with the charges. So there are three different corruption cases. It's been going. It first went to court in May 2020, so that's 6 years ago now. It's now in its seventh year, this case, partly because it's complicated. There's three cases, partly because he is very obstructive. He always said he could be both be charged and go to court and be the prime minister and do his job. But what we've seen is that he can't come, you know, he's got backache, he's just come back from Washington, he's got a variety of reasons, dog ate my homework kind of reasons for not being in court. So he's now, for example, just this week was meant to be in court, said no, he couldn't. The court said, well, can you come for half a day, if not a whole day? So on and on this goes, this pulling, this dragging out of this court case. And there has been pressure on Israel's president to arrange a pardon. And what the president has said is, before I do a pardon, you have to discuss a plea deal. And nobody really wanted this plea deal, but we have this week heard from the Attorney General that she's prepared to discuss a plea deal.
What does a plea deal mean? Does it mean an admission of guilt?
That's exactly the nub of the issue. He would say, no, it shouldn't include that. She would say, yes, it should. And she said, no preconditions. So if we're going to do two things, the court case goes on as slowly as, you know, goes on as slowly as it has been, and no preconditions. You know, I'm not making any assurances like that. So I have heard two Israeli analysts saying that he would like that and would like a kind of sinecure that if he didn't stand again for, I mean, I imagine that would be the deal, you can no longer stand for in the role of prime minister, he wouldn't mind being president.
Why not?
I think the reality, the fact that we're having this discussion about this case where Benjamin Netanyahu famously said there won't be anything because there isn't anything to find or there isn't anything there.
Yeah,
and the fact that it's, that you know, and the spin coming out of the right wing in Israel is this is a lost case, a lost cause. But it obviously isn't so lost. And anyhow, court cases, as we know, are...
Well, if it's a lost cause...
It's a lottery.
If it's a lost cause and if there's nothing there, you hurry the trial through. You get it out of the way. The question about, I mean, it's a ravishing prospect that Netanyahu may one day be the president of Israel, but would his health stand it?
Well, that's, you know, there it is. If he goes to, if he is found guilty, he could be spending his 80th birthday in prison. Just think of that. He's now 77 years old. When about 2023, there was all this, is he sick, isn't he sick, what's going on? And he had a pacemaker put in, but we were only told about it afterwards. Now, after the fact, we've just heard this month that he had treatment for prostate cancer, which he assures everyone is fine and he's better. But he hasn't got a good track record of revealing the truth. Yep. So he's 77 years old with a pacemaker and prostate issues. And you would have to have that concentrating your mind. It must be said that I've been watching him for a very long time. I don't think he looks well. I think he looks haggard, exhausted, and he doesn't look well every time I see him.
A perfectly healthy man fighting a war on how many fronts would probably look haggard too, Iris.
No, that's exactly right. I remember when I was there, I was so exhausted and I was reporting.
Directing them.
No, and I would look at him and I'd think, I'm not up all night filing, and I'm only filing. You are running this war. How are you even standing?
If he were to step down, if something were to intervene, who would take over from him in the coalition he now runs?
There isn't much time. If he were to step down, you know, it's we're talking now we're May, the elections are in October. There is a system within the Likud, and it's the second person in the Likud which could actually be changes. The last time I looked, it was Yariv Levin, the very controversial justice minister, the one who was pushing the judicial reforms.
Right, trying to gut the High Court.
Indeed, that was its aim.
And there is no possibility that Netanyahu could negotiate some kind of fresh coalition that would bring in the followers of Lapid and Bennett.
That's why there were five elections in the space of 2 years, because the followers of Lapid and Bennett at that stage in their previous iterations didn't agree to sit with Netanyahu because of all this corruption story. So would they now agree to sit with him? Some people say, yes, we should, because what we have to do is get rid of the far right. That's an argument.
And rein Netanyahu in.
Rein Netanyahu in, bring him back to the centre, not let the far right agenda control this country. So that's one. That is one position that's actually being argued for strongly. And other people say, no, it's now a toxic leadership and it must go. And we maintain the position that we had before, which is we can't sit with him.
A last question. Why did these two men who teamed up before, who beat Netanyahu at the polls, why did they their government only last, what, 18 months or something before it collapsed?
They had a majority of one. Benjamin Netanyahu was a very, very tough opposition leader, much tougher than they ever were to him. So the opposition never voted on any issue. And it was just very hard to keep running. And one of the there was an issue that brought them to breaking point, but I would have said it was only a matter of time. That issue was not something It would have happened inevitably anyhow.
Yes, but were they able to legislate anything? I mean, were they able to actually function as a government?
Yeah, they did function as a government, not always effectively, but they did function as a government. They signed a deal with Lebanon, a gas deal that was actually quite controversial. Benjamin Netanyahu said he would never have signed it, but in fact it was being negotiated when he was prime minister, so I don't think that was exactly true.
So you've come all this way into Late Night Live, Iris, to tell us in your deeply informed way, with absolute precision, that anything could happen.
I'm afraid that's true.
Iris, thank you so much for joining us on Late Night Live. I've been talking to the veteran Middle East correspondent Iris Makler about the state of politics in Israel today.